You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning is on now.
Welcome back to hour number three on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Thanks for joining us. Be here till 10 o'clock when the NFL Combine Special continues on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Great stuff from Corey Parson, Joe Lisi, and Rich Sherminello. They'll be there from 10 to 12. And then after that, let's see who else we got on the slate for today. I'll bring it up when I get a second. My schedule closed on me, so I will update you accordingly. But I would like to say that the RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package for 2017 is here. Stay ahead of the competition with in-depth articles and insights from our award-winning analysts. Prepare for your draft with our new and improved cheat sheet generator and get access to fully sortable projections and over 800 player profiles. Enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount on the RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package. So, in any event, we continue with our breakdown of baseball and football, kind of flipping back and forth. It's that time of year for those of you that are college basketball fans. We're going to have some college basketball content coming up here in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to be at a couple of college basketball tournaments this week in Pittsburgh at the A-10 and the Big Ten in D.C. I'm likely headed to Arizona for the Final Four in a few weeks. Fun event down there. I've done the last few Frozen Final Fours, George, and I'm also likely going to the Frozen Four, which I know you're an NHL fan, but I'm probably going to the Frozen Four as well in Chicago. I know you don't watch as much college hockey, but I would say in general that's a fun event. So if you ever get a chance to go to it, bring your kids. It's good times. That college hockey community is pretty tight, as is the hockey community in general, and I think people have a lot of fun. It's less corporate than some of the other events that you go to.
Oh, this is very true. Yeah, hockey is a little bit more open as far as the public's concerned. Now, listen, they have to be, right? It is the redheaded stepchild of professional sports.
Yeah, so they do a pretty nice job with it. We'll continue to I'll keep you updated there. I'm excited for college basketball this time of year in college basketball. I probably haven't watched as much this year as I watched the last couple of years, but I've been to a few games.
I've watched about the same.
Yeah. I've been to a few games, and I'm going to be certainly at a whole bunch more here in the next week. I'll probably pick up 8 games or so in the next week. Those college basketball tournaments go all day, so I try to watch as much as I can. But in any event, later today, like I said, we have the NFL Combine Special, then FanRag Fantasy Baseball, I believe with Al Melchior's after that. The producers with Pete Considori, Chris Pavona, will be after that from 1 to 3. And then Rusty's Fantasy Basketball Weekly, Weekend Fantasy Update, bunch of other shows. There's a few things mixed around. You'll see some replays. You hear some replays of the NFL Combine Special as well. So looking forward to that. The D linemen and linebackers are in the mix today, so those defensive highlight players and those war daddies, as George likes to say, will be in full display today at the Combine. And those guys will probably recap after us. They'll recap exactly what happened with the quarterbacks. Did Deshaun Kizer really hurt himself? And frankly, on the flip side, Deshaun Watson is considered to be one of the big winners, George. John Ross is getting a lot of the pub because of his 4.22, but Deshaun Watson went out there and he ran a 4.66, better than his competition. He's 6'2", 221. He ran a little bit faster than people expected, and he made all the throws that people wanted him to make. He'll have a pro day, which will be even more controlled. Again, it's going to be these three guys down the chute here in the next 6 to 7 weeks as we figure out where they're going to go. And it's going to be team needs. It's going to be a lot of other things that factor in. I guess the big story that there is potential to happen is that somebody goes up and trades for one of those top three picks.
And I expect it to happen. I wouldn't mind knowing the last time a draft happened where the top three picks actually remained the top three. Like I said, I think Cleveland, it's going to come down to me where if they're not going to take a quarterback at one, they have to trade out. And I can see that's being the same for San Fran and Chicago. Well, I have to believe San Fran is taking a quarterback at number two no matter what, since they don't have one on their roster right now. And Chicago's almost in the same boat. I guess if they want to run with Hoyer, and I guess they could, but that would be a disaster.
They could. I mean, it's not gonna give you a lot of positive vibes for 2017, but considering where they're at now.
If you're playing for 2018, sure, if you don't like the quarterback class this year, but you like it better next year, and this year maybe you do take that top pass rusher, assuming you mentioned Williams, who I think falls out of a top three, or if Garrett, let's say quarterback does go 1-2, then Garrett falls to 3. I can see that. Where you, once again, you eat it for 2017, get another top draft pick next season, and then take your quarterback. I guess you have to do some scouting on who's coming out next year. Certainly, I can see that. I think that is plausible. But then against Chicago, we know one of these teams, or at least I would assume at least one, not necessarily these three, maybe you want to include a couple other teams, is going to go a trade route, right? I still think Garoppolo's available. I think Glennon's available. So those guys also make sense. I don't think Tony Romo is going to any of these three teams, because I think he wants to go to more of a contender. So I don't see Romo being in play here. But they could go that route as well. Like I said, you can make an argument. The best move for Cleveland is to trade the number 12, get Garoppolo, and then one, go Garrett. And that wouldn't bother me in the least. I think that'd be actually very good.
You know, it's you brought up an interesting reference point there, because talking about 2018. So one of the big stories that you may have read about is that I was reading quotes from a scout, anonymous quotes from a scout, and like an AFC scout. But one of the most talked about stories amongst GMs and scouts is that the number one overall pick next year is a quarterback named Sam Darnold from USC. I say that now because obviously it's conjecture, but he's overwhelmingly the best prospect, and they're saying he's a very rare prospect. Now, for those of you that had a chance to watch Darnold this year, as I did, he played in 13 games, but he really was starting down the stretch, including the bowl game against Penn State. He completed 67% of his passes, 3,000 yards, 31 touchdowns, 9 picks. He had a 161 quarterback rating. But Darnold is considered to be an elite prospect in the same breadth with Andrew Luck and some others. So when you talk about tanking for Sam, people are saying there's a hashtag going around, suck for Sam. Jets fans are using it pretty liberally, but that has been the talk, that he is so much better of a prospect than everybody here this year that maybe you do think about that, but how could you possibly guarantee yourself that you're going to go 1-15 or 0-16? You know, there's ways to do that.
Suck for Sam. Like, yeah. It's funny. I don't know if I mentioned this to you. I might have. But Bill Polian pretty much suggested the same thing earlier this week, or maybe even late last week, that the Jets were, you know, looking really to mail it in this season. I don't know if he brought up Sam specifically. But he was hitting the same thing. The Jets are really looking to mail it in to get a top draft pick for 18.
Reality is, he's the number one guy next year. If everything goes according to plan, Darnold's a shoe-in to be the number one. There's some other guys out there. Baker Mayfield from Oklahoma. You're going to have questions about him at the next level because he plays in the Big 12, because he's not prototypical. He just made a knucklehead move off the field a week ago where he got arrested. Fought some cops and ridiculous situation.
So disappointing when you hear this over and over again with all athletes in all sports.
And dude, he's like, he was like prior to that, and they'll still love him down in Norman, but he was revered down there as to like the kind of kid he is, how what a scrapper he is and what a team leader he is. And now he got into this scuffle. It seems like knucklehead stuff, and it wasn't, I don't think he was throwing punches at the cops, but he kind of resisted arrest, ran from them, that kind of stuff. In any event, Sam Darnold would be the number one pick. So if these teams pass and they feel like they're only going to win a game or two next year, they'll be angling for that. And that will be a very highly sought-after number one pick. Now, the Colts had the number one pick when they jettisoned Manning. It was really a debate between Luck and Griffin, and I didn't think it was that heavy of a debate for the Colts. I thought Luck was going to be the shoe-in number one. There was a lot of stories that people at the time, people said Griffin might be the number one overall. I never thought for a second it wouldn't be Luck. So I do think that that pick next year would be extremely heavily sought after and would have a huge price tag, but there's a very high likelihood that one of the teams that and that that ends up number one will need a QB. So we'll see. You know, would you really take a chance on that, George, and pass on a QB this year because you're thinking about Darnold next year and you'll spend whatever it is to go up and get him?
Well, can't the Jets justify it like this? We'll pass on a quarterback this year because we have Hackenberg. We want to give him another year.
Absolutely. So the Jets can do that.
Isn't that the way to justify it to themselves?
The Jets can absolutely do that. I wouldn't take a quarterback this year if I were the Jets in the first round. No way. I would trade out of that sixth pick, and I wouldn't consider taking anybody really until the mid-round. There's a bunch of guys there that are developmental prospects in the mid-rounds. Brad Kaya, quarterback from Miami, who people liked going into the – he really is a guy that should have gone back for his senior season. I decided not to. He apparently didn't do himself any favors at the combine yesterday, but he'll be a mid-round developmental prospect. There's not a huge ceiling on the type of QB he'll be, but honestly, we've seen this work out before. Not everybody's going to be Dak Prescott and Russell Wilson, but there's opportunities for success in the mid-rounds. There's a guy named Nathan Peterman from University of Pittsburgh that people are saying can step in right away and improve your football team. Does he have the ceiling of somebody like Tom Brady or somebody like that? Probably not. Roethlisberger or Newton or whatever you want to say. No, but he's a guy that could come in and maybe be starting for a team this year, a la Dak Prescott, if something happened to their starting quarterback. So, in any event, the Sam Darnold thing is very much a real story this year at the NFL Combine. I think teams are pointing towards that, and maybe that's the QB of the future. But what price are you going to have to pay, whether it's through a bunch of losses this year or draft picks next year to get up there? If a team needs a QB and they're at number one next year, they won't trade out. So that's something you have to consider. It would have to be somebody like, say, if one of these teams drafts the rookie this year and they end up being really bad again. Very high possibility of that, by the way, with the top two teams in Cleveland and San Francisco. You know, what if they find themselves at the number one pick next year? Then it's a king's ransom. And having your own QB.
Absolutely. I mean, we'll say it again. It's a quarterback league. When you get a chance to draft the quarterback, generally you're going to take that chance. But I think the problem is we've heard this for a while now. Yeah, this is not a strong quarterback class. There is no Andrew Luck here. You know, people are going to keep bringing up Dallas with Dak Prescott. Dallas got lucky. No one saw Prescott becoming this. And even Prescott fell in the draft because of his off-the-field issues, or I think it was a DWI. So that's why he fell down a little bit. This is just the way the game's played nowadays. Generally, you don't have a choice. If you need a quarterback, you got to draft one. I'm of the belief, Mike, and I've said this before, that I don't know if I'd say I would take a quarterback every year, but probably every other year. I'm taking a quarterback late just to see if I can develop him. See if this guy comes on late. You never know what you're going to get. It's what teams like New England has done, what Green Bay has done over the years, because sometimes it works out.
Yeah, and George, to your point, we've talked about this with a couple of teams in particular. There's not a lot of teams that have backup quarterbacks that they can rely on. But there's a couple of teams in particular where they were competing this year, and if anything happened to the starting QB, the season was immediately over. Frankly, it happened to the Raiders. It would have happened to the Steelers. If they had to hand it over to Landry Jones, they would not have reached the level that they reached. It would have happened to the Giants. Would the Giants have gotten to the playoffs if Eli goes down in Week 10? Is Ryan Nassib going to go in there and shepherd the offense enough that they were able to get it done? I mean, in some ways, you see stories about how the Steelers and the Giants are disappointed because they missed on their developmental guys, right? Nassib and Landry Jones haven't become the guys that they've wanted to become. And I think Landry Jones may actually hit the market this year. There's not going to be a ton out there for him, but it was just a story relating that the Steelers, the only other quarterback on the roster would be Zach Mettenberger, and are they going to have to draft a mid-round guy? I could see the Steelers absolutely doing that. I think they will. It could be somebody like Nathan Peterman, who, frankly, I think will move up into the draft a little bit too high for the Steelers to pay a price. They're a now team. They're more a now team than ever before, George, because there's you can see the end of the horizon here for Roethlisberger.
Right. Certain teams need a backup quarterback more than others. I think Pittsburgh's a good Roethlisberger's getting up there. He's getting up there in age. He's already talked about retirement a little bit, so that lets you know there. Plus, he gets hurt a lot, takes a lot of hits. You know, Dallas, when they had Romo, was the same situation. You needed a good backup. Certain teams don't. Giants may have missed on the scene, but When's the last time Eli missed a game? You know, so it's not as huge a deal for them. So I get where all these teams are going with this. Certain teams need one more than others. There's nothing wrong. Most fifth-round picks don't make it anyway. Try and develop your quarterback. We keep saying it over and over again how important it is. So why not try and develop one? It works out great. You'll have trade bait if your starter stays healthy. It doesn't work out, okay, you move on. But at least you're trying rather than automatically trying to get one when you need it. That's the hardest thing. You know, Dallas got lucky. No matter how you look at it, they got lucky. Prescott was a fourth-round pick in the complimentary round. Yeah, it wasn't like they thought, you know, they thought about him. They tried to get three or four other quarterbacks. They tried to trade up to get Paxton Lynch. Tried to trade up to get Connor Cook and kept getting sniped over him. They thought about trading up to get Carson Wentz to go really up front of the draft. They got lucky with Prescott. But that's why you do things like this. This way you don't want to be forced in a situation where, oh, my God, we need a quarterback. Cleveland, you know, I don't know what they're going to do. You know, maybe they do get Garoppolo. Maybe they end up getting their guy. But they may regret for a long, long time that they passed on Carson Wentz last year.
You're right. Absolutely right. We'll continue this discussion after the break. It's Mike and George back after this. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike and George here for another 40 minutes when we pass over to the NFL Combine special. Pete Considori has been with us throughout these last 2+ hours, playing happy birthday tunes, which I appreciate. I'm gonna figure out something fun to do with my family later today. But George, to continue along, here it is. He does like a nice delay on it, so that I think I'm past it, and I think I'm gonna talk about another topic, and then bam, the weirdest, creepiest. Like if this happy birthday music was in some sort of horror movie, like Happy Birthday to Me, I would be scared. I would be scared of that music. So hopefully we're scaring listeners around the globe with our creepy, creepy happy birthday music. There's some light, like some sort of weird piano player horror movie happy birthday song. So thank you, Pete. I appreciate it. In any event, what the heck were we talking about? You sparked my memory. I was talking about backup QBs and developmental QBs and all that kind of stuff. So we're going to see some guys that get drafted in there. If I were the Jets, though, is what I wanted to say, George, I would double down, like all together, not only trade out of the sixth pick, but not even really think about addressing QB this year. I'm not suggesting that the whole suck for Sam thing is something that you try on as a strategy, because that's hope, and that hope is not a plan. So you don't hope for that because it might not happen. Too many factors at play. But what I would say is that they have two developmental QBs on the roster. I'm starting to hear people say, I'll just bring back Geno for another year. Don't bring back Geno. Just let one of these other guys do it. If you want to bring in a bridge QB and pay him a little bit, I could see that. I guess if you got Geno at a discount, maybe you do that. What I just find odd about the Geno Smith thing in New York is this regime didn't pick him. None of the regimes that have been in contact with him have given him any kind of vote of confidence. So why would you bring him back? I just didn't think they wouldn't want him in the building anymore. It's more a distraction than anything else, no?
Well, if they truly are doing the suck for Sam, which I love, by the way. I think I like this more than War Daddy. if they truly are doing the suck for Sam, then maybe you do bring Geno back. You're not going to win too many games with them. You're already depleting your roster anyway, right? No more Revis, who, granted, is on his last legs anyway. Marshall's gone. Richardson could be gone. Deckers are going to be put on the market. I mean, what are you going to have left anyway? It may not matter who the quarterback is. You're not going to win many games. But I am agreeing with you. I think you absolutely, you got Petty and Hackenberg. Let's go. Put one of them in there and see what happens. I certainly don't think Petty's the answer. You know, I think Petty is just really a backup at best, and maybe really even more of a number three. This doesn't have the arm strength there in my mind to be a true NFL quarterback here. And Lord knows the Jets offensive line looked like they were trying to get him killed last year. I mean, really, that's not blocking people. That one shot he took from in the Miami game where no one blocked Cameron Wake and the Ndamukong Suh. It's like, oh my God! I mean, it's like almost like a code red where they were trying to get him hurt for something he did in the locker room. So, yeah. You know, like I said, but I think you need to find out, right? You know, you want to bring on a veteran, but that veteran shouldn't be somebody who plays automatically above these two. Maybe just somebody you want there for another quarterback. You need three anyway, depending on what you're going to do with a draft here. I'm fine with that if you truly are doing the suck for Sam.
It's such a good hashtag. It's hard not to laugh. So in any event, those are kind of my thoughts there. Yes, they could conceivably do some sort of mid-round quarterback, but they've already done that with Petty. I don't think Petty's the answer. The thing with Hackenberg, I have been critical of them with the handling of Hackenberg, but I thought it through, and the reality is, if you thought Hackenberg was a developmental prospect, then it's okay that you didn't play him. I'm actually okay with that. But they did spend a high draft pick on him. They spent a second-round pick on him. So I would think that a year into the system, and now he'll have this whole offseason as well, you would have to have some designs on him getting out there this year for a couple of starts. Is it unheard of that you would sit a guy for two full seasons? No. But I think maybe you want to take a look at him this year because they're not going to be in the playoffs. It might give way to whether it's Petty or Geno or whatever. It might just get to the point where, like, listen, we've lost 9 games already. Let's just get him out there and see what he can do for the last 6 games of the year or whatever that number is, and get a look at him. Does that then say the Jets are, you know, and the reality is if the Jets end up being the worst team in the league next year, they're just going to take the quarterback anyway. So that's why I don't go for a developmental pick in, I don't address the position at all this year. It's a bridge season. Don't worry about it. We'll worry about it next year. Does that make sense?
I think they should have played Hackenberg at the end of last year, but if he truly wasn't ready. But sometimes when I hear this, I think the coach is just trying to win games at all cost, even though, you know, at this point you don't want to win games. But sometimes I feel like that's what they're doing here. So,
do you think Jared Goff should have been out there though, George?
Yes, same situation. You need to find out. Let him get some game experience in games that don't matter. Your season's already over anyway. So yes, I think
you're changing my mind on this. I was kind of that mindset at one point this year. Like I thought it was embarrassing that he couldn't be out there, that they spent such a price on a guy like that for him not to be ready in all those months in the system. But now I'm starting to think more and more like maybe he should have been out there. It's okay that we have developmental prospects still. I know everybody's impatient and we want to get out there and want to see what we have, but you know, it was four. The Rams were 4-5, and the offense was abysmal with Case Keenum. And the offense then got worse when Goff came in. They didn't do a good job developing him, and now that whole coaching staff is cleaned out. But maybe he shouldn't have been in there. Maybe he should have been a guy that continued to learn. Does it really matter now that he's learning an entirely new system? That can be argued as well. But you know what I'm saying? Like maybe guys shouldn't be out there until they're totally ready.
I mean, don't you have to find out where they are at? I mean, you have nothing to lose anyway. What, like you're trying to win games here. And sometimes, let's face it, when you see this over, you kind of want to lose some games here. You know, you're going to get a better draft pick there. So you can look at it that way as well. But quarterback needs to play. Some guys aren't. If you watch Dak, I know I keep bringing up Dak, but if you watch Dak Prescott in preseason last year, he was okay, but not great in practice. He actually looked bad. But in games, he turned it on. Some players are like that. You need to see them in game action with the top players, and everyone's got the adrenaline flowing and playing at their best. I think there is something to that. So that's why I like to see guys play. Now, like I said, if you know he's not ready, he can't read a defense, he can't change the plays, he can't make the blocking calls, that's different. If he can't get the protection schemes right, that is completely different. You know, you don't want to get somebody killed out there, namely himself. But other than that, I think sometimes these guys have to play to find out truly what you have, or at least see where they are in their development. Yeah, how much more you really have to go. Yeah,
totally agree. And it goes back to Bill Polian. I know I bring him up a lot on the show, but he's somebody's opinion I really respect here. He's like cut from the same cloth as you, George. He's quite a bit older than both of us, but he's old school. Like He would be on old school fantasy. He's like cut from the same cloth. He can be a little cantankerous at times. He likes things that more done in the traditional manner. Sort of like yourself, right?
Yeah, I think when you say that, I am a traditional person. I do generally like, although I'm open to new things. I am open to them. But as you heard me yesterday, isn't in baseball, I would change quite a few things. Football, I admit, I didn't like when they changed the extra point rule. Now I do.
Yeah. You see, that was one that seemed kind of superficial, like the intention. Now, the intentional walk thing, don't worry about it. Like, we know it's going to save us like 7 minutes on a 15-game slate, but it doesn't bother me that the change is made. With the extra point, it seemed superficial initially because kickers hit field goals from that distance at such a high rate. But now we've seen it's a mental game. It's a complete change in the style and manner in which games can be decided at the end of the year. Hell, the Pats had to get an extra 2-point conversion in the Super Bowl because they missed an extra point, right? So those things do play a role now, but I'm with you. I think that has been a decent rule change. We'll see how those MLB rule changes go. But the reason I brought up Polian again is because he was saying that, similar to your point, there's no substitute for playing. And that's why he is irritated, and I think a lot of scouts and coaches are as well, that we see so many guys coming out early because now they're forced into situations where they aren't ready. We have to get them out there to play them to see if they can do it, but they're not ready to go. They're better off, in his opinion, going back for another year, getting some seasoning. We can study a little bit more tape on them, understand really what is Mitch Trubisky. He's such a question mark, George. He's only played 13 games, started 13 games, so we don't even know. And like everybody's hemming and hawing over hand size and height and, you know, his ability to hit intermediate throws at the combine. Like, we don't even really know what he is. And it's frustrating, I think, to everybody that these guys that are not ready to play are in NFL games and getting chased down by Von Miller.
Yeah, listen, quarterback, in my mind, in professional sport, it's the hardest thing to do. You know, to learn everything you have to learn here. Forget what you have to learn in your own offense, but to learn how to read defenses and not be afraid of getting crushed by someone like Von Miller. You know, it's an incredibly difficult position, so it does take time, which is why I also don't have any problem with sitting a quarterback behind an established starter for a couple of years. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. This is all we ever saw back in the day. Nobody was drafted and started the same year. That never happened. You know, you always drafted, you sat behind, you know, your Terry Bradshaw, your Roger Staubach, whoever it might be, Joe Montana, da-da-da-da-da. You know, it's you sort of, I don't want to say you rooted for the problem, but you didn't mind having the problem. Back when Steve Young was traded from Tampa Bay to San Fran, he developed. All of a sudden, they had the quarterback controversy, and eventually they had to go to Young. So the same thing in Green Bay. You drafted Aaron Rodgers because he fell to you. The value was too good. Eventually, you realized he was going to be a superstar, so you had to get rid of Brett Favre. You would like to make those kind of decisions, right? That's what transforms your team. I mean, we've seen it over and over again. Unless you have a quarterback, you're not going anywhere in the NFL. And once you get one, you know you're going to be good for 8-10 years minimum.
Yeah, and like, look at the teams. Let's just think of the teams that have been able to pull this off. It's the Patriots, Bledsoe to Brady. So let's just say hypothetically to Garoppolo, but I think he's getting traded. But that is a long period of success. I mean, Drew Bledsoe started in the league, I would say his first year was 93. So that takes us all the way to 2017. That's a hell of a run, right?
We're absolutely on
that's a ridiculous run. So we're on 24 years right now of solid quarterback, solid to stupendous quarterback play. The Colts, that's Manning in 97. Maybe his first year is 98 in the league, and we're in 2017. They did have a Curtis Painter year in there when Luck got hurt, when Manning went down, they had the Curtis Painter year. But bottom line is the starting quarterbacks were Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck. So they're in a long run. You got the Packers with Favre. I guess that's 92 to 2017. I guess technically that's the best run of if you're in totality. But really, after those three teams, everything else is a disaster. I feel good about being a Steelers fan, but, you know, Tommy Maddox and Cordell Stewart were in there before that.
I mean, listen, when the teams you mentioned was also Luck. I mean, think about it. Green Bay got Aaron Rodgers because he just for whatever reason it might be, fell to the end of the first round. That wasn't supposed to happen. You know, the Colts get, well, they get luck because Peyton Manning suffers the injury and their team just implodes without him. So it's funny how this works out sometimes. You know,
Brady's a sixth-round pick.
Right, Brady's a sixth-round pick that comes out of nowhere. For some reason, the Buccaneers, that I brought up before, traded Steve Young. They didn't realize what they had there. You know, so a lot of it is just either mistakes made by one team or you just lucked out because you bombed out in the right year or a player falls to you out of nowhere. I mean, we don't know why. Russell Wilson, why did he go was drafted so late? And now Seattle's set. Dak Prescott with the Cowboys. It happens. You know, it does happen. It's rare, and you can't bank on that. But this is also why I like to develop a quarterback. Why assume that you're going to get lucky? You know, we all remember this is fans. Fans remember the teams that got lucky and got a quarterback in certain situations, and they automatically assume it'll happen again. Yeah, it won't. You're kidding yourself if you think it was. Right. It's like trying to win the lottery because you know somebody who did.
That's right. It's a great point. Great analogy. So Mike and George back in a couple of minutes to finish up the Roto Experts in the Morning. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Network. Now, George, one guy that we talked about a bunch this year, switching over to MLB for a second, just flipping back and forth between the two sports, because it's that time of year. We're talking drafts. We're talking potential. We even talked backup quarterbacks, George, which is it doesn't happen a lot in March, but it's my birthday, and that's what we're doing. So hopefully you all enjoyed that. In any event, George Springer can beat you in a lot of ways, and if the Astros have their way, he'll be able to beat teams with his legs more in 2017. We've heard a lot of conjecture back and forth about this and that we thought he might be running less, but the stolen base has yet to be as big of a weapon for Springer in the major leagues as it had been in the minors. He stole 45 bases in 135 games combined between AA Corpus Christi and AAA Oklahoma City in 2013. Last year, he played in 162 games for the Astros and stole only 9 bases. He led the league being caught stealing 10 times, which is not great. Stole 9, caught 10 times. Some of that is, this is a quote from Astros manager A.J. Hinch. Some of that is just learning himself? At the big league level, it's a quote. I just wanted to let you know. Some of that is just learning himself at the big league level on how to run the bases, how to get a good lead, his reaction. He's one of the most physical runners underway when he gets going. We're working on a start, working on getting a better primary lead. He stole a base the other day. He's trying to work on a few cues that will make him a little bit better. He's gifted enough to do a little bit of everything. I don't want to put limitations on him, but he's still going to run the bases pretty aggressively. The situation dictates a lot. So his role, my role on this team isn't necessarily to steal bases. This is Springer. I have some good guys behind me who can flat out hit, and we don't necessarily want to run ourselves into an out. I'm going to run when the situation calls for it. I'm not going to steal 40, but I understand there's a time and place to go steal a base. So your thoughts, is this, you feel like they're greasing the wheels a little bit for George Springer to get moving? Obviously he has the speed to get it done.
I'm concerned about Springer in some other ways. I mean, struck out 178 times last year.
That is a boatload.
And that also brought his average down with 261. Homers, though, were up to 29. So I'm wondering if he's becoming a guy who's swinging harder, even on two strikes, not trying to put the ball in play. You know, where he wants to hit home runs. That's why the average girl dips down. That's why the strikeouts are up. But that's why the home runs are up. You know, so I would be concerned about that as well. Now, you mentioned 9 stolen bases is blah. For someone Springer, we thought he would do a lot more. Did steal 16 in 2015. Why was he thrown out so much? You know, in 15, crazy. He stole 16 of 20. That's 80% success rate. That's fine. And then you're down at 9 of 19? What happened to your skills there? You can't read a pitcher anymore? Because if you're going to have that kind of rate, you're not running at all. You know, they're not going to let you run. If you're less than 50-50, that's just not going to happen. I've said it before. Generally, most teams believe that you need to be successful at least 80% of the time for it to be worth the risk. Anything less is not acceptable. You're getting thrown out too much. You're giving up outs. So many teams believe it's Moneyball, sabermetrics. You don't give away outs. They're too precious. Stolen bases aren't as important. And I think this is where Springer was sort of hinting at when he said, I'll steal if the situation calls for it. In other words, you know, you lead up the ninth inning, you're down by a run, you get on base, then you're going to steal a second to get in scoring position, that sort of thing. Two outs, You know, you're on first, you steal second, this way a single drives you in, that kind of situation. So I don't think he's going to run wild, no. Do I think he'll steal more than nine? God, I hope so. But, yeah, when you put up the stats of the numbers he had stolen, that was really early in his, even in his minor league career, 13, 14. I don't think he's ever going to become more than what you saw in 15. You know, a guy who might steal. A great year, you get 20 stolen base, becomes a 20-30 guy. But more, I'm probably banking more around the 15 to 18 range, and even that might be asking too much.
So as his age of 27 season, George, you said the average dipped quite a bit and the strikeouts skyrocketed. I mean, to give you folks an idea, I mean, granted, this last year was the first year that he played a full season, 162 games, played in every game. So the plate appearances were up dramatically. But, you know, 114 strikeouts and 345 plate appearances in 2014, 109 strikeouts and 451 plate appearances. So you're looking, you thought maybe there's some more discipline. And then last year, 178 strikeouts. He is currently ranked as the sixth outfielder taken according to NFBC average draft positions right now. So obviously there are a lot of guys that can hit and get on base in that lineup, but you know, it's kind of quirky when you guys saw some big negatives from him, a couple of big negatives from him last year. But clearly the homers skyrocketed too. So you take the good with the bad kind of situation. And are you willing to take him as the sixth outfielder off the board?
I don't know if I would take him at six. That being said, I have no problem grabbing him. Looking at an outfield list, obviously I'll take Trout ahead of him. I think I'll take Trout about ahead of anybody. But yeah. I'll never have Trout because, God forbid, I should ever get the number one pick in the league. I'm going to take Mookie Betts ahead of him, right? If Chris Bryant is outfield eligible, that puts him ahead of him, but he goes ahead of him anyway. Harper, yes. Trey Turner? I don't know. Well, we'll see. I'm not sure about Turner. Blackman's probably a yes. Marte? If I want stolen bases, which I generally do because I know I don't draft it, you know, I'm not going to take it to be a D. Gordon or a Billy Hamilton, then I'm taking Marte. And then he's going to fall in right around there. You know, Stanton would be the same thing. Do I want home runs or do I want to take the injury risk? You know, really goes on there. But he falls in right there. So if he's not six to me, Mike, he's 8 to 10. Same general range.
Yeah, you nailed the first five guys, by the way. Kudos. And then A.J. Pollock is behind him. Giancarlo Stanton behind him. Nelson Cruz behind him. Ryan Braun. So that's kind of the wheelhouse that he's there. You know, I'm a Nelson Cruz fan, but I'm protecting him on my team, so I don't really have to worry about that. But, yeah, so that's kind of the wheelhouse that he's in. Clearly, you know, age 27 season, he's not the youngest of the younger future stars, but he's a guy that's still on the rise at 27 years of age.
Yes, and he probably still has more learning to do. He'll get only better. Like I said, sometimes when we do our analysis, you know, where it's pointing out the negatives, that's our job, to point out what he doesn't do. We all know what he can do. You know, we all know he's going to hit power. He's a very good hitter. I have no problem with Springer on my team. But I think if you're hoping for those numbers we saw in the minors where he's stealing 25-plus bases, you're not going to get that. The strikeouts do concern me some, but I think that's gross right now. I think he's that's another thing in today's game. A lot of players feel outs and out. I don't believe in that. You know, I like to put the ball on play. A, you'll get some more hits that way. Plus, you may move a runner up and so on and so on. But guys at two strikes, no, very few players are choking up. Very few players are cutting down their swing. They're still trying to make the ESPN top 10 that day.
Yeah. Another player there's a bit of news on was Gary Sanchez. Spring training offers a prime opportunity. This is according to MLB.com. Spring training offers a prime opportunity for experimentation, and so the Yankees are using this time to see how Gary Sanchez looks as their number two hitter. Girardi said he's kind of open to considering everything. Sanchez batted second in the Yankees' 11-1 Grapefruit League win over the Tigers yesterday at Publix Field. A lot of my lineups, this is from Girardi, a lot of my lineups have to do with trying to get guys the most at-bats they can get now. So, you know, as we fast forward and looking at projected lineups for the Yankees, do you see this being a real thing? There's Sanchez at number two. I mean, you got Gardner and Ellsbury up there at the top of the order to consider. Sanchez could be the number three projected lineup I'm looking at right now as Sanchez number three. But would you consider Sanchez at number two? And does it really change your outlook at all?
Well, we know that Girardi wants to break up Ellsbury and Gardner. He doesn't want the two lefties at the top of the order anymore, mainly because they're both, you know, been a little not very good. Gardner does get on base more than Ellsbury. Neither one has run like they should. So it could go either way there as far as Ellsbury leading off or Gardner leading off. Sanchez at number two makes sense. You know, he'll see more fastballs with Gardner and Ellsbury when they do get on base. In this day and age of baseball, once again, we see a lot of teams like to believe their best hitter should bat number two. You know, he'll get a few more at-bats over the course of a year at the number two slot than at number three. It's not much, maybe 20 at-bats. But still, it's something to look at there. I think Girardi's going to fool around with his lineup this during the whole spring training to figure out what he wants to do. He can go in many different directions. One thing we know Girardi likes, right, lefty, righty, lefty, righty, yes. Lefty, righty. He likes to split it up. So that means if you don't put Sanchez at two, that leaves him at four. Not that he couldn't be a good fourth place hitter. He probably hit 30 home runs this year. But do you want to put him at fourth? Or if you do believe he's your best hitter, do you want him in that two slot? I think Sanchez is at least going to start the season in the second slot. After that, we'll see.
So do you think it's Ellsbury at the top, Sanchez, and you put Gardner at the bottom of the lineup?
If you go strictly by numbers, it's Gardner at the top. He gets on base more often, and that's what you want, your number one guy. But we all know sometimes contract plays a part in this. I think, once again, Ellsbury will get first shot to see if he can, you know, somehow justify the $153 million, which we know he's not going to do. But I think he'll get first shot. If not, they'll switch it up.
So Ellsbury, Sanchez, then who's at three? You assume Holiday just stays in the cleanup spot?
I think that's where Holiday's going to stay, yes, as long as he's in the lineup. You're looking at a left, you're going to want a lefty there, right? Could be Greg Bird, who's having a big spring, right? He looks good there, so that wouldn't shock me if it's Greg Bird batting third. I don't think numbers real as far as, Greg Bird batting third, what are you talking about? He's not a fantastic hitter. So I could see that, though. Who else would you put third? If you want to go the righty-lefty-righty thing, well, in this case, lefty-righty-lefty, it won't be Didi, right? I don't think it's going to be Didi batting there.
That's the guy I was looking at.
It's probably going to be Carter. So I think it always has to be Bird.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was thinking Didi could be in there. We've seen him obviously flash for, he's been a really good signing for the Yankees, but I don't think anybody has any wild expectations about the type of hitter that Didi Gregorius is. He's put up nice
good
numbers.
Good solid hitter.
Yeah, he really put up nice numbers, and he's been a great
guy. You could go Bird
for them to have a
Holiday four. And then maybe Didi's even five slot. Really, Bird is really would be a good five slot guy. He's really the number three you're missing here. Judge would go six. Maybe Gardner seven. Then you got Didi and Castro, which I don't think you want them 8-9 because they're better hitters than that. Actually, it's a good problem to have, but the Yankees probably don't really have a true number three hitter right now. It may be that Troy's going to have to bite the bullet a little bit and go back-to-back righties or back-to-back lefties.
Yes, I agree. So we'll take a quick break right here, finish up the show before we hand it off to the NFL Combine Special with Corey Parson, Joe Lisi, and Rich Chiarmanello. Back after this. Wrapping up the show here, final segment, as we send you off for the rest of your Sunday with the NFL Combine. The producers will be on later, FanRag with Al Melchior, Fantasy Baseball with Al Melchior at 12. So, George, a couple of other things across the NFL world as we bounce back and forth between the sports. Jay Gruden.
Happy birthday to you, Michael.
Thank you very much. I can't wait to have some birthday cake for breakfast after this. So,
I hope that gives you nightmares.
It might. I think Pete pulled it from a horror movie of some sort. I'll be dreaming of that, and I'll get dreaming of having nightmares about some clown strangling me to death on my birthday with that music playing in the background. So appreciate that.
Remember Poltergeist? Remember the movie Poltergeist? You and I were the same age. You should remember Poltergeist.
Of course.
That scene where the clown is under the bed.
Yeah, it's horrifying.
I hate that scene. Yeah, that scene is like
when I reference horror movie clowns, I think of that first. I know there's others out there, but that is the one I think of the most, where the clown tried to strangle the kid in his bed. So, yeah, it was a very direct reference to Poltergeist, George. Of course I've seen that. Was it Craig T. Nelson was the dad?
Craig T. Nelson, yeah.
Later became coach, and now I don't know what he does. I think he was on some show. Oh, he was on a show called Parenthood on NBC. My wife watched
it. That's a decent show. He was also he did a cop show too. I can't remember the name of that either. But
he was a horrendous person on that show, Parenthood, by the way. He's a really bad guy.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah, he was had an affair with his wife for decades. On Parenthood, on that show.
He wasn't a bad guy. I watched the show. He wasn't a bad guy.
All right. We'll have to agree to disagree on that one. When they
killed him off in the last episode. It was a big sad thing. I think they buried his ashes on a baseball field. They were all playing baseball.
I will say I didn't watch the end of the show. I cashed out on that show because it was another one of these shows that was these wild dramatic swings from week to week. I found it to be unsustainable, so I checked out on it. My wife may
have
watched
it. So you found
a
show that was not quite based on reality. Wow.
Well, I mean, I know none of them are based on reality. Like Westworld is a total fantasy situation, but it's purposefully dramatic. I find the other stuff to be, they try to be realistic and then they're overly dramatic. They drop you into real life situations and then create unrealistic storylines. Does that make sense?
Yes, no, I agree. I know where you go with it. I'm just, I got to make fun of something. It's
Yeah, it is what you do. So a couple of things. Jay Gruden agrees to a contract extension through 2020. A little bit more stability there. Franchise Kirk, bring Jay Gruden back for a couple of extra years. Are we feeling good? Danny Snyder finally settling things down in Washington or no?
My first thought was, well, this means he has might have a little bit more power here. I don't think he necessarily signs it if he doesn't say, hey, I want Kirk back and all this other stuff, or I want him gone for that matter. But I think he's very happy with Kirk, or wants or believes in Kirk is what I should say here. So in the end, I just think he's been somewhat successful. They got a solid coach. Why wouldn't you want to sign him?
A funny side story. We don't have a lot of time, but I'll tell a quick side story. I used to work with somebody who had a meeting with Daniel Snyder. And this guy that I know is older than Daniel Snyder. And the meeting happened a long time ago. And he's going into this meeting. And Daniel Snyder's assistant says he really prefers to be called Mr. Snyder. And the guy I know is like, all right, it's kind of weird. Like, it's just a meeting and I'm older than him and whatever. Sure, fine. He just guesses the person. And walks into the meeting. First thing he says, hey, Dan, how are you doing? Just totally ignored it. Blew right through the instructions. And I think Snyder was kind of put off by it. But I think the whole thing was just kind of funny that the guy, even in his 30s, was like demanding that he's referred to as Daniel, as Mr. Snyder. Isn't that odd? I mean, he made a lot of money and had a lot of success at a really young age and then declared that he'd be called Mr. Snyder, that everybody had walked in the building. It's kind of odd, no?
It is, but we know people have their quirks. I mean, nothing surprises me anymore. Schneider looks like he could be that kind of person.
Yes, yeah.
Then again, I don't know about you, but I generally call everybody Mr. Automatically. It's just the way I was brought up.
I don't know. I think it depends on the situation. I think it's a very nice sign of respect, and like I will teach my son and daughter to do that. But in a scenario where there's maybe a work situation there, like I wouldn't necessarily call everybody Mr., you know, try to be more colloquial about it. And
well, at work, we know each other. That's a little different. But if I didn't know somebody, I'd probably use Mr.
Yeah, I get it. So one last thing. I only got a minute to talk about this story. Jonathan Allen, Alabama standout defensive lineman, surgically repaired shoulders, which could become a problem for him during his NFL career, but it's thought to be arthritic in some ways, which generally is a huge red flag. Does that worry you of him being the possible number one overall pick or at least a top five pick?
Of course it does. I mean, if I'm going to spend a number one overall, a top five pick, I want that guy to be around a while. I don't want to think he's going to be gone in 3-4 years or no. There's no chance for a second contract. So, yes, of course, it has to concern me. It'd be silly if I said it didn't.
Yeah. They're saying it shouldn't affect him for another 15 years. But honestly, every other time you read a story about it, and this is them saying it now, that it shouldn't affect him long term. But ultimately, you know what? Arthritic conditions in knees and shoulders in the NFL generally are a bad sign. So, you know, maybe that does red flag him to where he's not the number one pick and he slides off of the Browns' number one pick. In any event, thank you for joining us for these last 3 hours. It is my B-Day. I appreciate the well wishes on Twitter, and I appreciate the creepy music. Pete, thank you very much. That's okay. You don't have to talk to me. George, thank you very much. Appreciate you celebrating my birthday in this manner with the Combine and MLB talk and all the good stuff.
I'll confess to you, Mike, the birthday thing was my idea last night. Pete came up with the music. I told him to play it. I want to play it every segment, so you were lucky.
It's great. It's great. I appreciate it. It's good stuff. So thank you. Thanks for listening, folks. Good stuff coming up next. The NFL Combine Special. The fantasy executive, Corey Parson, will be with Joe Lisi and Rich Germanello. They'll break it down for you. We'll talk to you next week, folks. Thanks a lot. Have a great week.